The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests, and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
We believe in God, the Eternal Father.
We believe in the Bible
Son, Jesus
to be the
Christ.
Word of God.
We believe in being honest, true, chaste, benevolent, virtuous.
We believe that through the atonement of Christ, all mankind
we also believe the Book of Mormon to be the Word of God.
We may say that we follow the admonition of Paul. We believe all things. We hope all things. We have endured many things.
The Mormon Channel now presents Why I Believe.
Welcome to Why I Believe on the Mormon Channel. My name is Rick Starr, and I'm so happy to have with me today five return missionaries who all went to St. Petersburg, Russia. And we're excited to hear what their experiences were like in Russia. Their names are Chris Stevens, Steve Mathis, Tally Alisa, Kimberly Winterton, and Ariel Amada Levitt. We're so glad that all of you can be here. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I've been thinking about this, and I wondered, first of all, what was it like when you opened your call and you saw Russia? I'm sure that many of you imagined that Russia was the farthest thing from your mind. Give me some feedback on what it felt like when you first opened your call.
Well, first of all, I think a lot of missionaries expect that they're going to go to a mission where they maybe studied a language in high school or something. I thought I would go to Germany because I studied German. And then I opened that call, and it was the furthest thing from my mind. And my parents actually have always wanted to go. Well, my dad has always wanted to go on a mission to Russia. So the first thing that I thought and I said was, oh, Dad, you're going to be so jealous when I opened my call.
He was excited, I bet.
He was excited, and I can tell you that the emotions that definitely flew into my heart were just this overwhelming feeling of love for the people, and I don't know where it came from, because I'd never even remembered meeting a Russian in my life.
That's interesting. Anybody else? Steve, how did you feel when you opened your call?
Well, I remember I was going to school, so I was away from home, and my parents got the letter, and so they opened it when I was there. And when I read Russia, I was just like, cool, Russia, like, where's that? You know, I knew where it was, but, like, I guess I should have paid attention more in history, because I didn't know much of the history, and it kind of made sense later when I learned it, why my mom was, like, kind of crying and scared. My grandma was even more scared. But I just thought it was cool, like, all right, let's go. But nothing, like, I was excited, and I went on the internet and started Googling Russia and reading all about, like, there's missionaries that had put, like, little sites up. And so I just started looking into it and went, and it was good.
That's great. Well, Russia is a great big country.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure you all got out a map. And where is St. Petersburg for our audience? Where is it in Russia? Because Russia is, like, half a world big.
It's one of the most western cities in Russia. So it's more part of Europe almost than you'd consider Russia, because it's just a lot more modern. It's right there,
Finland.
Yeah, right below Finland.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Below Finland, north of Moscow.
So Finland, when I think of Finland, I think cold. What was the weather like when you were in Russia?
It's freezing.
It was really cold. Although there was one area actually called Kaliningrad that is separated from the rest of Mother Russia. It's in between the Baltic states of Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. And I was there during the summer, and there were mosquitoes. It was hot. Windows open at night. And, of course, I think that was partially because it's so close to Europe, but it was warmer.
And I like to joke with my parents, even though I'm from Utah mainly, I don't like the cold at all. And so I actually got transferred down to Kaliningrad right before the winter started. So for me, it was more of a mild winter, and I always joke that Heavenly Father must know that I won't survive in a really cold winter atmosphere. That's why he sent me down there, so I'd be a little bit warmer.
Had any of you had any Russian experience before? Any experience with the language?
Ariel and I actually took Russian together in high school.
Oh, really? How do you feel that it helped you?
Definitely gave us a little head start in the MTC, but after that, I felt like I was just as behind as everybody else.
Oh, okay. So the playing field was leveled in the MTC, I guess. Tell me about the MTC. When you first got there, you started learning about the culture, the language. What were the challenges there? What were your thoughts about Russia? Maybe some preconceptions that you might have had about Russia. Chris, we haven't heard from you yet. Tell us, what were your thoughts about Russia before you got there?
I had no idea, you know, that Russia was even an open mission. When I opened my call and when I got to the MTC, it was actually really quite funny. We got our name tags, and it had Stareshna, which actually means elder in Russian. I didn't realize that. I had no idea what that even meant, and I couldn't even pronounce it. And I noticed everybody else's name tags had that on it, so I figured, oh, it must be elder. But the language, I think, was one of the biggest barriers, at least for me. It was extremely difficult. The culture seemed interesting enough from what we learned from our teachers, but the language was, you know, very, very difficult. And being in kind of a new surrounding where you're with somebody 24/7 all the time was a different experience for me as well. But, so there were some barriers there, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it was a challenge and it was an adventure, so it was worth it. Yeah.
As a mission always can be.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear about the culture of Russia. When you got there, what were some of the challenges that you ran into as far as the differences between growing up here in America and Russia? What were the challenges? What were the differences in religion, in politics, in culture, in the people? Any input on that?
As far as missionary work goes, I grew up in two Mormon communities, Provo and La'i'i Hawaii, and it was strange to talk to people as a missionary that had little or no reference to God. So we spent a lot of time just talking about the nature of God and not getting much further than that, which was kind of frustrating as a missionary, not being able to talk more about really basic truths about God.
What's the major religion in Russia?
Russian Orthodox, but most people don't even know Russian Orthodox doctrine.
So that was maybe a small segment of the population,
right?
Or maybe even just a tradition,
right,
among the people there. So when you taught people the gospel, this was new to them. Everything was new to them. Even the concept of maybe Heavenly Father was new to them.
Absolutely.
How did they accept that when you started talking about that? I mean, they had to have some concept, a little bit of concept of religion. Or had they just been politically separated so long that they didn't have much of a concept? Kimberly, do you have any?
Well, politics, I think, definitely played a big role with the communism that was there for so long. There were definitely clusters of people that I would run into that didn't want to hear or have anything to do with religion in general. A lot of them had lost trust and therefore faith in God because of the great trials and wars and things that they had seen, not to mention just the takeover of their choices. Mm-hmm. And so that played a role. And then again, at the same time, I found some people that were still very God-fearing after so many years, and they were just looking for some bright light. Russia in and of itself is a dark place. They say they have two seasons. They have 9 months of white winter and then 3 months of a green winter. So sharing the gospel with them was this one hope of there is a truth out there. There still is revelation that comes. And when they heard that, I think that there were many that were open and wanted to embrace that because they were looking for some hope.
Mm-hmm. When they did hear about the gospel, what were some of the challenges that they had personally? I hear that there's a lot of challenges with alcohol and drugs, that kind of thing. What kind of things did you encounter there?
I think some of the hardest things were is you'd find that, quote, golden investigator or something, and you could see it in their eyes. You could see that they were feeling the Spirit, and they wanted to believe in Heavenly Father and Jesus. And you knew that they could feel it. But then, you know, they kind of go back to the worldly aspect of things. And can I trust what you're saying? And so many times you'd find that person, you could see that they started to see the light, but then they got afraid because of what their friends or their family would tell them about the, you know, misconceptions of being a Mormon, being a Latter-day Saint. And I think that's one of the most heartbreaking things you could see is because you knew they felt it. You knew they felt it, but they got too scared because of what other people thought, that they couldn't get over that barrier.
Mm-hmm. Chris, do you have any input on that, any feelings on what happened when you tried to teach people the gospel?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest issues that we had, or at least I had as a missionary, was a lot of the people, they can be very trusting if you're friends or family, but just kind of people on the street. There's not a lot of trust there, but one of the big problems we had was a lot of people felt that it was just a Western influence, some sort of Western, you know, religion, and that, you know, we had it so easy in America, now we were coming over here to kind of try and tell them that this is our religion, and it had more to do with America to some people than it did with the actual truthfulness of the gospel. And so that was something I ran into a lot, as well as kind of the atheism, you know, the communism, and everything being about science. And so I ran into a lot of agnostics, if you will, people who just simply didn't believe in God, as they said. But I really think one of the big issues is it was really difficult in their culture for them to be kind of the one lone person that was a member of the church, as opposed to, you know, you wouldn't always have a whole entire family that were members of the church. It was one person trying to keep the faith, and word of wisdom issues were really big there. Tea and coffee and cigarettes and things like that just kind of ingrained into their culture from a very, very early age. And so I think that made it very difficult. You know, if you didn't drink, you weren't accepted in some circles. That's just kind of how it was. I mean, we even were asked, you know, to have sit down and have a drink with an investigator or whatever, because that's just that's kind of how they celebrate. And mm-hmm. so it was very odd to them that, you know, we didn't drink, we didn't smoke, we didn't do things like that. We weren't interested in things like that.
So if you didn't participate in something like that socially, would it be offensive sometime?
I think actually it would be offensive. There were, you know, several times where you'd be with an investigator or something of that nature, and they were offended, because that's one of their ways of kind of inviting people in, is, you know, come in, sit down, have a drink with us, and no, we don't drink, you know. But I think once you kind of explained it, most people were willing and accepting of, oh, okay, that's what you believe. Mm-hmm. And maybe sometimes they were even kind of impressed. So,
thank you. Tali, you're from Hawaii.
Correct.
A lot of friendly people in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And as I've just heard, Russia can be kind of a dark place. Maybe people are a little more reclusive, maybe not as outgoing, from what I understand. What kind of a culture shock was that to you, or difference did you see there?
Well, even working on the street as a missionary in Hawaii, you acknowledge everyone that you pass. You smile, you wave, you say hello. And in Russia, even making eye contact can be awkward on the street. Uh-huh. And so when you're trying to contact on the street, making eye contact or saying hello, smiling at a stranger is very strange. And I always found it interesting that many members would tell their story of their first meeting with missionaries. They'd say, I was standing on the street at the bus stop, and there were two young men there smiling at me. Can you believe that? They were smiling at me. Like, they were strangers to me, but they were smiling at me. That's so strange. And that was, I think, a beautiful way to be introduced to the gospel for many members, to have strangers be friendly to you. And I think that really struck a lot of Russians about the church, about missionaries.
Wonderful. I'd love to hear some conversion stories that maybe each of you encountered while you were there, changes of lives. Let's start with you, Steve. If you could give us a little idea of maybe a story that where somebody's life was changed, and they made a complete turnaround.
The main one that comes to mind for me, I think a lot of people in here probably worked with her, and I wasn't the first missionary to have contact with her. But, and this story, kind of the same story, I think, applies to many of the members, because the youth is a huge part of the church in Russia. But as missionaries, we do a lot of, like, service activities. We call them sports nights, or we teach English classes. And that's how we attract a lot of the people come initially, just to, like, learn English. And then at the end, we always, like, share a spiritual thought or tie the gospel into it. And that attracts a lot of people. Like, you know, they come to English so long, and then they start hearing the gospel side of it, and then they get really attached. And then from there, as they start going to church, at least the youth, they'll go to church, start reading the Book of Mormon, pretty much they'll know the church is true. They have a testimony, but then they run into the barrier of a lot of time. Like, I think probably the main one is their families. Their families haven't accepted it, and they can't go against what their family's teaching. Ariel talked about one of the main barriers. But the girl I was talking about, I think she had already been going to church and everything for probably a good year, maybe. And then while I was there, I had the opportunity to help, you know, continue with her, watching her go to church, watching her grow, until she actually ended up having to go kind of just against what her parents were saying. And she was old enough, you know, she was, you know, over 18, so she was an adult or whatever. And so she just had to kind of go against it, and just ended up getting baptized anyways. And to me, that was, growing up, I grew up in the church, I was born a member, and I always think, I'm like, I wonder if my parents hadn't raised me in the church, would I have, like, found the church on my own, or what kind of person would I be? And I hope that I would have been a good person, but, you know, I don't know. And so it was a huge, just to see the youth, and especially this person, just to how good a person she was. I mean, her parents were probably good people, not they weren't bad, but they didn't promote, you know, the not drink, you know, that's the standards that we teach in the church, but she did it on her own. And many of the youth did there. And then the day she got baptized, it just kind of strengthened that. And it really impressed me just to see how strong the youth were. And I always hope, I think about all the time, I hope I would have been like that good of a person if I hadn't been, you know, brought up in the church and brought up with the guidance that I was brought up in. It's amazing to see that.
She'd have to be a particularly strong person to be able to overcome
challenges
of family not accepting it and mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
I think so, especially as just being the age she was, not all of her friends even probably knew what it was and thought it was weird, and then and her parents, so extremely strong.
Ariel, do you have any stories like that?
I do.
Stories?
One of the stories, it was in my last area before I came home, and her name was Rita. And Rita was only about probably 14 at the time, and she had started just, again, like Steve said, as so many of the youth, she had started coming to kind of the English lessons, and we just barely started to teach her, and so I didn't really have that long with Rita before I had to go home. And I can remember I was in actually the mission president's home the night before I left, and everybody else was asleep, and I just had this strong spiritual feeling that I needed to write my testimony in a Book of Mormon and give it to her. And so I stayed up and just wrote my testimony, because she wasn't ready yet, but she was starting to get there. And it wasn't until years later that I was able to find out, not just because of my efforts, but everybody's efforts, but kind of starting with that those few moments of being able to teach her just a few discussions and leave that testimony in the Book of Mormon, she felt something. She felt something enough that she wanted to read it. And it took her 3 years, because she was so young, for her parents to actually decide. But it was just an amazing thing for me to think that really is the small and simple things we can do mm-hmm. that can get people started on that path. And she's amazing now. Like, she's actually going to start to be, or starting to prepare to serve a mission maybe in the summer. Just to see the combined efforts of all the missionaries, the testimony of the Book of Mormon, to see the power that's in there, the true testimony, you know, that Joseph Smith taught, that it would get you closer to Christ than any other book, because, you know, she didn't have that support system yet. So she started it out with founding her testimony in the Book of Mormon, and then working with the missionaries and kind of coming full circle. And I think that's really what sustained her through those years of not being able to be baptized and just being able to go to church here and there, but just having that firm testimony of Christ. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing to me to think of that. And she just truly astounds me with the strength of her testimony that carried her that long, just knowing that she would not give up until she was able to be baptized. And for me, that's just, it's a wonderful story, especially as a missionary coming home and you wonder what happens to people after you leave, or did I make a difference? Just to see her small thing just makes everything so worth it.
Mm-hmm. Any other stories like that, Kimberly?
Well, my first area, which was way far up north, it was really cold up there. It's called Petrozavodsk. And when we were serving up there, there was a lady that we found by knocking doors. And we were knocking on this door, and it was my turn to speak. And I hadn't been out, I don't think, more than 3 months out in the field. And my Russian was really limited. My accent was horrible. And the lady that opened the door, her name was Olya, she recognized my accent, of course, and knew that I wasn't from Russia. And so she continued to listen, whereas normally when you knock on their door, they don't even open the door. They just say, "Who's there?" or "What do you want?" And then you tell them, and they're like, "Ah, I'm not interested. Go away." So it was interesting to me that not only did she open the door, but when she heard my voice, she said, "You're not from around here, are you?" And I told her, "No, I'm from America." Either that or my companion told her, because I couldn't say it. And that one small thing opened the door for this woman. And later on, we found out that she had a prosthetic leg. And she was living in a situation that was really, really difficult financially for her. This woman embraced the gospel. And like Ariel was referring to earlier, she wanted to be baptized, but she had a number of fears to overcome. And one of them was a concern with the man that she was living with. Anyway, as time went by, she had such a strong testimony of the truth and couldn't deny it. She knew that Joseph Smith was a prophet. And I remember one of our last discussions and visits with her, that she bore her testimony to us. And I felt so deeply of the spirit and the conversion that she had. And at that point, we asked her, we offered for her to be baptized, and she finally accepted. We were surprised, because it hadn't been probably more than 5 or 6 visits. We were so touched by her faith. And we found very quickly thereafter that there was some adversity. She had a great fear of being baptized because she had a prosthetic leg. And she thought, how is this even possible that I could be baptized with one leg? And what am I going to do? Well, she was a particular fan of our zone leader, Elder Matalov. And he was a big, burly elder from the Ukraine. And we got to a point where we knew transfers were coming. And rumor on the street was that he was going to be transferred. And we went to visit her the week, I think, before this transfer, and we let her know that there was a chance that he might be leaving, and that was the ticket for baptism, because she didn't want anyone else to drop her when she's baptized, but she knew it was true, and she didn't want to pass the moment up. And that baptism was one of the most special days on my mission, to see her go under the water, and afterwards she became the Relief Society president of that branch.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, go ahead, Eric.
Add something to Kimberly's story, because I was recently talking to one of, I also served in Petrozavodsk, and I was recently talking to one of the members there, finding out kind of about the people you grow to love there. And just so Kimberly knows as well, Olya's still a very strong member, and right now she's the Sunday school teacher in the branch, so it's wonderful that after so many years, it's always nice to hear that the people you convert are still active and they're still strong.
That is so great. That is so great. Well, of course, the name of this show is Why I Believe, and I'm very interested to hear, maybe Chris, if you could start. Tell us about your conversion, or how your conversion was strengthened, your testimony was strengthened on your mission to Russia.
Well, like most of the people in the room here, I was born into an LDS family, sixth generation LDS, and then going on a mission was, I'm going to say it was expected, but it was also just, you know, part of the program, but it was something that I had to pray about and decide that that's what I wanted to do. You know, there were things that I had to give up to make that sacrifice to go, probably not as much as others, but my testimony certainly was strengthened from the first days into the MTC all the way 2 years later to the end of my mission. Just being there, just being part of that program. And I think being in Russia and kind of the being in St. Petersburg and the type of mission that it was, we always say it's a lot different than other people's missions, especially stateside or people who go to South America or things like that. You know, there is this tendency to say it was dark and there were lots of issues. But I think one of the biggest things for me was being surrounded by people in this room, great elders and sisters. We really kind of had to create this support group for ourselves to be able to do the work that needed to be done. And so it was always a strength to me to meet other people, you know, elders and sisters, whether they be from America or Russia, who had the same beliefs, who knew what we were doing was right and was an important work in the gospel and for, you know, Jesus Christ. So that's always something that's stayed with me, and I've always tried to stay, probably not as well as I should, but in contact with some of those people that had a real strong effect on my life. But just, you know, reading the Book of Mormon every day, being kind of immersed in the missionary culture, if you will, you know, you get up, you study. We had 30 minutes or an hour to study Russian, but we also had 30 minutes to read the scriptures. And that wasn't something that was always a part of my life until I went on my mission. And, you know, that was part of the program. And so that's kind of stuck with me, where it's, oh, I need to read my scriptures, even if it's a verse or 10 minutes or whatever. And so, you know, that was a strength to me as well. And there was some persecution, you know, I'm not going to lie. There was some, you'd get pushed around or people would want to fight or whatever. And sometimes it was because you were American, but a lot of times it was because of your religion. You know, they thought that you were spreading false doctrine or whatever it was. In a small sort of way, I mean, it was persecutions in this kind of box, if you will. But that really strengthened my testimony, too. You know, these people, they're mad at us or they're mean to us because they think what we're doing is wrong. So, you know, I had to go and figure out for myself, know that this is right, based on the scriptures and prayer and things like that.
So. You had to strengthen your own foundation.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Tali, what effect did your mission in St. Petersburg have on your feelings about the gospel?
I think watching people make sacrifices for things that I would never have to make a sacrifice for, like just wanting to go to church on Sundays, I've never felt like that was a real sacrifice for me because it's just always been part of my life. But watching people sacrifice relationships and lifestyles and time at work to participate in the gospel really made me question my own devotion. I already had a strong testimony, but it questioned how far I might, you know, I might push myself to keep the devotion that I've promised to keep to the gospel. It was also amazing to watch people that had been in the church for a few years and watch the drastic difference between them and people that were still investigating the church or people that had no contact with the church at all. There's a former bishop there who was probably the oldest member that I met. He'd been a member for 7 years and he'd been longer in the church than any other members. And his family was just happy and strong and so beautiful, and to watch the difference between that and other people that we came in contact with that did not have the light that the Olympians had, that was testimony building as well. Mm.
That had to be a great thing for you as missionaries to bring somebody to church where they could see such a difference, such a contrast in the people that had already accepted the gospel. That had to be amazing. Steve, how about you?
One of the biggest things I saw that helped strengthen my testimony is the temples. There wasn't a temple in Russia. Of course, there still isn't. The nearest one, when we were there, was it in Switzerland? Sweden. Sweden was, which is like a boat ride, a train ride, and I don't know how far away, but when members would go, and it was like a, it wasn't like here where we can, when my wife and I want to go to town, it's like, which one should we go to today? It was like, they'd put a week of their, I mean, it took them a whole week to go. And then when they went, they were probably at the temple for what, like a couple of days, and they just cycled through the sessions. They would just go through, and it wasn't like a one, you know, go through once and then, all right, we'll see you next month. And I remember in one of the areas I served in, there was a guy, one of the guys there, and I don't think he would, couldn't have been very wealthy, but I think every year he was on the temple trip and he would save up for it. And just seeing that, and then him and other members, when I got home, I was like, I need to go to the temple because I have ample opportunity, more than hardly anybody. And there's just to see them do that, and their testimony of how important it was really strengthened my testimony, because I took it for granted. When I, before my mission, I went to the temple probably like a month and a half before I went on my mission. I didn't go back till I was in the MTC. And I always thought about that. I was like, I could have been going like every day, and you know, I wasn't doing anything. And I'm glad we're talking about this because like, I've kind of been slacking lately, so this is like getting me going. You know? But that really, I mean, it really did strong. And I got home, and I was just like, I need to go. And I did for a long time, and it's because of them, one of the reasons.
That brings up a good point. Economically, where were the people in Russia, St. Petersburg, at? What kind of sacrifice was it for them to go to the temple, the nearest temple?
I mean, I don't know their books, but it would be huge. I mean, most of them didn't. Most members didn't have cars; they had little apartments with a lot of family. So I would say it would have been a huge sacrifice to go. And I don't know exactly what they were doing, but I would say more than I've ever had a sacrifice in my life. So mm-hmm.
Some of them spent years just to be able to go, especially if they had more than one in their family that were temple worthy.
That's amazing.
Even paying tithing sometimes, you know, was an issue. And it can be here, too, but I noticed there it was sometimes that became an issue even for members who had been members a long time. But to see them make those sacrifices, I think, was another faith-building, testimony-strengthening type of thing.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely. Ariel, tell us about your conversion on your mission in Russia.
Well, let's see. Kind of like Tali said, I already had a pretty strong testimony of the gospel. And it seems like, I don't know, Tali and Kimberly ever had that, but I grew up with three older brothers. So for me, it was kind of like, you just went on a mission too. It's like, I didn't factor in the fact that I was a girl and girls don't necessarily have to go. So kind of even getting to my mission, there were some people who said, you know, girls don't have to go on missions. But for me, there was always that desire to go. Just, I needed to go, and I wouldn't be able to move on in my life until I did. I needed to go and serve. And just that aspect of going and serving and learning to love people who you might not have the most in common with is probably where I got the greatest conversion or strengthening of my testimony. And there was a woman named Raisa, and she was also in one of my last branches. And it was kind of at that point in your mission where you're really digging in because you know you're only going to be there for so long. And at first, the previous missionaries had kind of told us about how they usually go each week and do service, and it was mostly just having lunch with her and kind of helping her feel welcome. So at first I was kind of just going, well, I don't think I'm going to go do that. I got people I need to be finding, people I need to be bringing the gospel to. But then as we started to go, she also had her mother living with her, and I actually don't even know her name. We always just called her Mama. And as we got to go there, and I'm sorry I always get emotional about this because they just grew to be very close to my heart. She actually had us help her because her mother was ill. She actually had these horrible wounds on her legs, things that here you needed to be treated medically for. But there they just don't have that type of medical system. So when we would come, I was one of the first missionaries she actually felt comfortable with asking just to help kind of put this ointment on her legs and to help her. And they'd rub her back sometimes and Mama, as she would say it when I would get done doing some things, she would just say, Zolotia Ruki, which in Russian means just golden hands. Mm. And Mama actually passed away on my mission. She got very sick. And for a long time I wondered what it was that she needed to learn, why she had to suffer so long before passing away. And then one day I realized maybe her suffering was so that I could learn how to serve, so that my testimony could be strengthened. And I still think to this day, because of the service I was able to give to them through her suffering, the thing I was able to learn, it's helped me to become more of a Christ-like person and to truly know of the love that the Savior has for each of his children, wherever they live, whoever they are. It just helped me to learn how much love he has for them no matter what. And I am so thankful to her, because I truly feel that maybe her suffering was so that I could learn that experience and never forget that. So that's probably one of the ways that I was just had the greatest conversion, is just learning how much the Lord loves each of his children wherever they may be.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. Kimberly, how did your mission in Russia affect your testimony?
Wow. Well, just hearing everybody else's has just reminded me of so many things that took place there. And, you know, I think back a lot on before I ever even went on my mission. I didn't plan all of my growing up years as a girl that I was going to go on a mission. I probably didn't really even decide until I was about 21 that I was going to go, or maybe 20. I started to think about it seriously. And as I was debating the idea of it, in my mind, I remember very vividly going on a drive with my brother through the Provo Canyon and talking to him about all the different reasons, the ways that it would help other people, or the ways that I would grow and whatnot. And the bottom line was, as I was talking to my brother, he was a returned missionary, he said, you know, Kimberly, all those ideas and reasons are great reasons to go, but the only enduring reason is the love you have for the people. And I think that I just echo what Ariel said, that learning to love somebody no matter what, whatever stage they're in life, wherever they're from, whatever they look like, whatever they wear, that's the bottom line. And as I went through various stages of my mission, different adversity and adapting to the culture, I served with a lot of Native companions, and learning from their experiences, seeing the sacrifices that they would make in their enduring faith, that was a strong lesson to me. And also my own dedication, it made me question my own dedication as to how far I would go to see the gospel through, no matter what the adversity is in my life. So I will always be grateful to the examples of the people of Russia for their endurance and their faith, because it strengthened mine.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all for all of your sacrifice and your devotion to those people. It's great to hear the stories of how you affected their lives, and at the same time, you coming back here have been so strengthened by their example and their sacrifice. In Russia, there's a lot of sacrifice that somebody who joins the church would need to make to do things like go to the temple or pay tithing. And you had an experience with Yuri from Gatchina, and apparently he was a very poor man. And tell us a little bit about him.
I served with him for about 4 months, and he was just kind of didn't have enough money to dress. Like, his clothes were dirty, but he was probably in that branch. You're the strongest member in the branch, in my opinion, hands down. Like, there every week, doing his job plus whatever else job needed to be done. We would help him. He had they call them dachas, little farmhouses. But we'd go help him on his dacha, and just his example.
Sounds like he made a lot of sacrifice to...
He did, and he was just a good guy, always joke around with us, and just a fun, happy guy, even though he maybe didn't have all the things that... I have, if I don't have a bicycle in my life, I'm kind of depressed because I'm a big cycler. And, you know, he just didn't have hardly anything, and he was always just a happy guy and made this serving in the area a lot of fun, and you could always count on him for anything. So,
great. Thank you. Russia is very different from us culturally, and all of you going to Russia probably have some sort of funny stories that happened to you that were... Yeah, okay, I could tell just by looking. So, who wants to speak up? Tell us a funny story, Kimberly.
Or I could do it.
You go ahead. I'll
so it affected
in.
Both of you.
Well, we were companions at the time. So Kimberly and I were going to a meeting with some investigators, and we happened to arrive there, and as most of us know, they have a pretty big alcohol problem in Russia. There's a lot of alcoholics out there. So we arrived at this meeting, and shortly upon entering the home, we were greeted by the mother and her son. And at the time, you could see that this man was very drunk. Very drunk. And Russians can be very cold on the street, but once you make your way into their home and they realize that you're a friend, they're some of the most loving people you'll ever meet. So,
and we visited them before.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we had visited with them before, so we were coming back for another meeting, and we walked in, and again, you could see that this man was just very, very drunk. And upon seeing that, I kind of started to back off after I said hello to the mother.
The first thing they said is, "Hey, Siostri, we're playing poker. You want to play some poker?"
And so I just kind of started to back away, kind of you know, just putting some distance between myself and this man. Well, Kimberly, I don't think, saw where he was coming from quite as fast, because before she knew it, for me, even, it was in slow motion. You could see this drunk man coming in.
He was
in.
Big, too. He was a Russian boxer.
Yeah, he's probably almost twice.
Seven feet.
Yeah, almost twice her height.
Yeah, he was
but
huge.
But you just saw him coming in, and he grabbed her shoulders, and she just couldn't do anything about it. And you could just see her head just turn one way, because he just came in and laid a big old kiss on her. Just a huge kiss. And, you know, and poor Kimberly, I'm just laughing hysterically, going...
I was screaming, no,
and she's just going, no, and
yes!
She just felt so dirty afterwards, and I'm just poor Kimberly, because I just teased her probably for weeks about that. We reenacted, because it was just so funny to me.
Reenacted.
Of course it didn't happen to me, but, oh, and she was just mortified.
It was a communal apartment, too, so the second we walked in, we were cornered, and the bed is the couch, is the, you know, the table, and so I was cornered between this bed and this very small little walking path, and this big, huge Russian boxer comes right at me, and as she said, I was mortified, and she didn't let me live it down for weeks on end, nor did the other elders that she told.
Did you call into the mission president that night? And...
Ariel probably wanted to.
Tell him what happened.
I was so ashamed. Not that it was my fault, but yeah. I was still ashamed.
Well, the biggest question on my mind is, did he join the church?
I'm not sure that we went back after that. Really, I really don't remember going back.
He kind of scared us.
Now, somebody here had an experience where they had to hitchhike quite a ways. Who was that?
That was both of us.
Tell us about that.
When you're in Russia, we have the passports, visas. Every year, when we were there, once a year, you had to leave the country, renew your visa, and then come back. So we were, a lot of missionaries did it in Finland. We were going to Latvia to do it. It was a bus ride out. I think it was like 13 hours on the bus. We were only on it for six. We were going, right when we were crossing the border from Russia into Latvia, they had to do that, you know, passport check. So they come through and they take everyone's passports. And then we were there probably like 30 minutes just waiting. And when they handed them all back, we were sitting there thinking, okay, it's good to go. It's the middle of the night. By now, we're probably like 10 o'clock.
Well, no, it's like 1 or 2 in the morning.
Okay, so we hadn't been up this late since we got the MTC. But we all of a sudden you hear them in their broken Russian, in their, you know, broken English, and they called the missionary's name. And they called him up, and they're like, you can't go. Like, you can't go to Latvia because your passport doesn't work. And so they just, all right, get off the bus. And so he's like, all right. And he leaves the bus, and there's three of us there. I'm including the missionary that got kicked off, so there was four of us going. And so we're sitting there, and the bus is, like, leaving in 5 minutes. And then we're talking to a lady, and we're, like, we're kind of trying to figure out, like, well, we're leaving, so you guys going to come or go? And sitting there, we're just like, let's go. So we got off the bus, and so then we're sitting there. And in the meantime, while we were deciding, Elder Levitt went back. We were, like, probably, like, a mile or two into Latvia before they checked where the station was to check. So he had already gotten a ride back into Russia. We got off, and we were okay to be there, so we were just sitting there, and like, all right, what do we do? How do we, like, where's he at? And this guy pulls up in a van. He's like, you guys need a ride back over to Russia? And we're like, yeah. So we're like, we'll get in. So we just hop in his van.
A van with no interior and no windows.
Yeah. Oh.
A wooden plank on the
floor. Yeah. It wasn't winter. It was warm outside, so it was summertime, luckily. So we get in, and he starts going back on the road, but then he, like, takes a detour, and he's, like, going on these dirt roads around this barn or something.
Road.
I don't even
just,
he was just
like,
driving. He, like,
there was just kind of rotten vegetation out there.
Like, he was, it's like he was smuggling us across the border.
So at that point, we look at each other, and we're like, oh, no, we have just made a huge mistake. Our parents are going to hear that we died in some van.
With no interior.
With no interior.
We don't even think we caught the guy's name. We just...
He just told us to get in, and we said okay.
I think we told him we had like 10
smart.
Rubles or something. I don't know. But anyways, he drops us off at this, and then we end up finding the Elder Levy. He was on the phone with the mission president and saying, yeah, it's just me that's off. And then all of a sudden we show up, and like, and he's like, oh, wait, everybody else is here too. So I think the mission president's kind of like, oh, great, now I got to worry about four missionaries getting home instead of one. I think he would rather just stay on the bus, but...
And there were three elders?
Three of us that all got off
and
to find
sister.
Him. And one sister, yeah.
Okay.
So anyways, we got together, and we're sitting there now. By now it's probably getting light, like maybe 5 in the morning, maybe even early. I don't know. So we're just like, well, let's start walking back to Rush. So we just started walking and holding up our thumb. Finally, we got a couple rides. And we got into the nearest city. It took us like maybe 5 hours to get into the nearest city that there was missionaries. And then we went to their apartment and then got a taxi, another 5-hour drive into St. Petersburg to the mission. I mean, it took us, it was a long time. then we got to go again. We figured it all out. And we got another trip. So it was good.
To get your visa renewed.
Yeah. So it was an experience. I think the three elders, I think we kind of shocked Sister Elisa, because she was the only sister there. And this is like the first time I think I'd met Sister Elisa. And I think she was kind of shocked. I don't know. I'll let you say, but...
I didn't tell my mom about this until we got back. I didn't want her to come pick me up.
Yeah. It was an experience. I'll probably won't forget it.
It doesn't sound like it.
Yeah.
Chris Stevens, do you have any favorite stories you'd like to share with us? Some funny things that maybe happened to you in Russia?
Oh, boy. I had a lot of fun things happen to me in Russia. You know, going back to kind of the culture thing, one of the big shocks to me was public transportation. I grew up kind of in a rural area. All the kids in high school had their own cars. It was the only way to get around, you know. And on our mission, we didn't have bikes or cars or anything. We walked and we took public transportation, specifically the subway. They called it the metro. And I remember the first day we got there, you know, we get off the plane and it was a smaller plane. You know, you kind of land there and the St. Petersburg airport had been converted from what I believe was an old military, you know, airport, because there was never a bunch of international flights in and out of that country. Our mission was actually relatively young when we got there. It wasn't more than 10 years old, maybe 12, which is young, I think, in certain aspects. But we got off the plane and there's guards with semi-automatics there, which was just kind of this new experience to me. And I'm thinking in my head, you know, what did I get myself into and things like that. And then we get into the airport, kind of the terminal that they have, and there's the APs, and they hand us, you know, a painting of Christ and something in Russian. It was some verse, if you can believe. I think it was from John, and now I can't even remember. And MTC Russian and regular Russian are completely different. And so we were feeling, you know, at least I was feeling pretty good about myself because I could converse in Russian to Americans. But they put us on this bus, and I don't know, everybody kind of split up, so we might have all had different experiences, but we didn't even get our luggage or anything. They said, okay, you're going to get on a bus with experienced elders, and you're going to start contacting people. You're going to start telling them about the gospel. And they stick us on this bus from the airport to get into the city, and you're just packed in there. That was one of those first experiences where it's, how many people are we going to get on this bus? And that's kind of how it was in Russia, and I'm sure, you know, everybody else in this room can attest to this. And then we got down into the metro. And the metro is kind of this awe-inspiring, amazing thing in a certain way, because they, you know, they dug them really deep underground. And some of them are very ornate, very, very pretty. But you have to take this escalator forever down, you know. And you get into this car. And I've never been on a subway before in my life, maybe once, you know. And they just pack as many people on there as they can. And I just remember it was the weirdest experience to have somebody, you know, shoved up right against me. You know, talk about personal space and things like that. And you can't even speak Russian. And everybody, you're listening to everybody talk, and they're going a mile a minute. You know, this experienced elder was, well, talk to them, you know, say something. And it was kind of like, Strasvuce, you know. And it, you know,
which means what?
It just means hello.
Oh, okay.
That's not how you say it. You know? And so things like that. And so, you know, and you're trying to read this card, and you have very limited experience. And I remember one of the elders, we were actually on the subway together, and he was just kind of standing in the middle. And these subways, you know, they're like bullet trains. And if you're not holding on to something, you're definitely going to fall over unless there's a bunch of people packed up against you, which was typical. And sure enough, that subway takes off and he falls right over. And of course, everybody laughs and everything. Fortunately, it wasn't me. But I remember public transportation being one of those huge kind of culture things to me. I mean, the food, obviously. But they had these things called marshoots, which were like simple taxis that ran one route to another. So you'd have to find the right route that you wanted to go, and you paid 30 cents or whatever it was, and it took you to certain places. No seatbelts, kind of like the van with the bench. You know, they put as many benches in there as they can, get as many people on these things as they can. You know, you're sitting on top of each other, and the guy's going 100 miles an hour, things like that, you know. And I remember one time we were on a marshoot or one of these taxi vans, and the guy jumps up on the tramvai racks, which is like a, you know, it's an overhead kind of rail. Mm-hmm. And he jumps up on those lines so he can get around the traffic, you know. And I remember my companion turned to this driver and said, you know, what are you doing? And he said, oh, this is the best way to go, you know. He said, what if we get hit? And the guy said, oh, it's not going to be a problem, you know. And sure enough, here comes this train the other way. But that's just kind of, you know, that was some of the culture shock there was public transportation, you know, was certainly one of them. Just so many people. You know, I went to high school in a town that had maybe 7,000 people. And I think St. Petersburg and the surrounding area had a population of about 6 million. Hmm. And so for me, it was kind of just, you know.
And how many missionaries were in the mission?
Well, you know, when we started, I think there were about 110. That's but by the time we left, it seemed it dropped to 90 or 92 or something. Mm-hmm. There was always more elders than sisters. It was always, you know, you had two or three companionships of elders to a zone, maybe two to a district, and you had one set of sisters to an entire zone. And there were some zones I was in when we didn't even have sisters, you know, and so it was kind of a nice thing to have sisters. They had kind of a different perspective and a fresh perspective and things. And so there weren't a ton of missionaries, mm-hmm. and we covered quite a large area.
A lot of ground to cover with that many missionaries.
Oh, yeah.
Big city. Mm-hmm. You spoke about culture shock. Tell me about the food in Russia. What was it like?
Well, I've got a great story about that, again, with the companions with the
Sister
Winterton. We had an investigator, and he'd been investigating the church for a long, long time.
Eternal investigator.
He even paid tithing, and he wasn't even a member, and he would pay tithing. His name was Victor, and Victor was, I mean, just probably like Yuri a lot, just as poor as you could get, pretty much. I mean, their home didn't even have an inside bathroom. They had to go outside. They had kind of jimmy-rigged a little shower, but just pretty much had nothing in their home. But Victor was the kind of guy who, his heart was so kind, he'd give you the shirt off his back.
A lot like Kris Kringle and his personality, too. Very warm and loving.
Just a super loving guy. And we went over to his house one day, again, to teach him, and they have this food in Russia called holodets. And the best way I can describe holodets is like a meat jello. It's
okay.
The way they make it is they get bones of some kind of animal, usually pig bones, and they just boil it until it kind of turns into this gelatin. And for some reason, they love it. And so he had made this holodets for us. And we sat down, and again, poor Sister Winterton, because I just love to joke. And so she was just dreading eating this stuff. And I just had to kind of open my mouth and just told Victor, she loves this. You should give her extra helpings. This is like her favorite Russian food. And she just gave me the death eye. And again, I was just laughing. And poor Sister Winterton just had this plate full of this holodets, this meat jello that she, you know, just had to kind of grin and bear by the spoonful to get it down. And
it was coming back up as it was going down. It was bad.
And I think she wanted to just kill me after we had to leave that day. Just, what were you doing? I was just laughing because it was just so funny. But
and
yeah,
is it the custom
like
that you have to eat everything on
your plate? Oh, yeah. Like, when they're as poor as that, it's just, you know, it's really offensive. I had companions later on that, you know, would kind of shriek at the thought of what they were going to eat, and I just would kind of pull them aside and just say, you will eat what you're given, because these people have sacrificed everything to give this to you. They have nothing. This is something very special to them, and to them it's a very special thing for them to have the missionaries into their home, to be able to feed them something or give them something. So you just, you know, out of love for them and in order to not offend them, you ate whatever was given to you, whether it was the most pleasant tasting thing or not. You know, you didn't want to offend them. You wanted to show them how much you appreciated their sacrifice. Hmm.
I think it was New Year's, too, when we were there, so it was a double whammy. It was a delicacy. Holodets is a delicacy in Russia. Mm-hmm. And number two, it was a holiday, and here's this wonderful giving but not super wealthy person that wanted to give us everything he could for a New Year's celebration.
Well, you were sweet to...
she was sweet. Got it when we stepped out the door.
Yeah. I think I got it later on, but it was worth it.
Well, these stories are inspiring. I'd love to hear, what kind of advice would you, having been on a mission, give to somebody who's considering a mission for themselves? Dolly?
I would say, I think I was stressing about little things before I went on my mission, about being prepared, culturally prepared, and just having all the right stuff. The right gloves and the right shoes and all those things. I really put way too much focus on that. I realized the only thing that you really need is just to have a shared testimony, just to have a personal relationship with your Savior, and that will make it easy. But that will just keep things in perspective, mm-hmm. and that's really all you can do to really be prepared.
Anybody else? Steve?
Yeah, the main thing, because this is something I struggle with a lot, and I still do struggle with it now, is just being a little timid and, like, when you're asking someone to do something. Because I remember a lot of times people, they'd say, well, what are you doing here? And I wouldn't I would just kind of be nervous to just because I was afraid that if I said what I was doing, it would turn them off. If I said, well, I want to baptize you. I want you to be converted to the church. You know, I want you to. So I would just say, oh, we're just here. We're teaching about our church. And I'd just kind of give them an option. Like, I'd make it easy for them to say, I'm not interested. Well, you don't want to push it on them. But I was really timid about that. And I always look back. I said, if I could always go back my mission, I would just say, I want you to be baptized. I want you to find out that Jesus loves you. I want to find out that you have, you know, a Father in heaven who loves you, and I want you to be baptized. And I never said that bold on my mission. Mm-hmm. Just because I was timid, I was scared that they would be turned off on. I don't think people would be. I think people want to hear that, and it was just hard for me to say it. So I just work on that. And a lot of it is if you have a strong enough testimony, it'll be easier too, because mm-hmm. you know it more inside that's what they need. A lot of times we talk about eternal investigators, and a lot of times I wonder, for me, if I have investigators eternal, I wonder if it's because I'm giving them the option to be eternal investigator. If I'm just kind of saying, well, when you're ready, we'll be back next week, you know, pray about it. And then when you ask them, did you pray about it? Yeah. So how'd it go? Not, and you just kind of baby them in a way. You got to be nice, but just get to the point and say, here's what we want for you. You need to do it. If you want it, do it. If not, cool, you know, maybe later, and just go with that.
Yeah, I think asking them to make a commitment to the gospel, mm-hmm. which many of them already know is true in their hearts, it's just the commitment that's the barrier. That is the real key, is just to get them past that barrier. Mm-hmm. And then they can go on with their life in the gospel. Ariel, do you have any advice?
Yeah, I'd say if you're thinking about it, then you should do it for sure, because the memories of your mission will never leave you, and the experiences you have and the things you learn will never leave you. And probably, I would say the most important thing besides a strong testimony is to really show people the true love you have for them. Because people can tell when you come into your home if you're there and they're just another number to you to mark down for your numbers that you report for the week, or if you actually care. And if you show them you're truly concerned for them because you love them, I think the best way to teach the people the gospel is to help them to feel like they're your real brother or sister. Help them to feel like they're one of God's children, and they can see that and they can feel that. And I think that just helps to bring the Spirit in so much more, because then they know that you're there because you care about them, not because it's a notch on your belt or whatever it may be, but that you're really there for the right reasons, and you do it because you want them to gain the same happiness and strength that you've been given from the gospel, that love of Jesus Christ, that love of our Heavenly Father that you can only feel almost when you have the gospel, when you have that gift of the Holy Ghost, and then they can gain their own testimony. So I guess basically just really try to love the people, and if you're having a hard time, then pray for help to love the people, because that'll help you carry out so much more in your mission than if you are having a hard time with them. Mm-hmm.
Kimberly, what are your thoughts, your advice to somebody?
Don't ever look back. Once you make that decision, don't look back. Don't question it. And then everything else will follow after, and it'll set a great pattern for your life, for the remainder of your life. I remember that our mission president would tell us that the habits and the decisions that we made on our mission would set a tone and would be a huge reflection upon what the rest of our lives would be like. And I've seen that happen, and there's a great heritage in store for missionaries and, most importantly, for the people that we serve when we go out there. And there's nothing greater. My favorite scripture from the mission, and I learned this in a particular circumstance when I was spared from some persecution. I was hurt, but I was still spared. It was in 3 Nephi chapter 22, verse 17, and it says, "No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord." Whether that's a physical protection or a spiritual protection, there is a magnificent heritage through the gospel, and I think that is a testimony that it's all true. So don't ever look back.
Chris, do you have any advice for somebody who wants to go on a mission or is thinking about going on a mission?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, go. There's no better experience for that type of experience in your life. I would say, you know, have the right attitude from the beginning, knowing that people are out there seeking the gospel, or they're seeking something, serving in Russia and serving those people. They really were looking for hope. There were a lot of people there that needed to hear the gospel. They were there for whatever reason in their mind or in their heart, they knew that there was something missing in their lives. And so if you go in with that attitude, you know, throughout your life, I guess, or just with the good attitude that, hey, I know there's people out there looking for the gospel, and I want to share, you know, the blessing that it's been in my life, I think, you know, you'll make it. So.
Thanks. Well, we're about out of time today, but just wondered, there may have been something that came to your mind today while we were talking that maybe you didn't get a chance to share. Are there any final parting comments that any of you have on the Why I Believe show today?
Nothing on like the spiritual side, but I remember they always tell you how missionaries how important it is to look good, and you're always like, yeah, yeah, whatever. I remember I was contacting once, and I didn't iron my shirt. We did our own laundry there, and it was wrinkly, like a road map. So we stopped this guy, and we were talking to him, and I'm like, you know, we're here to talk to you about, you know, Jesus, and we went through the whole spiel about the gospel, and he stops, and he just like, look at your shirt. And he's like, why is it so wrinkly? Like, how are you? You say you're representing like your church and Jesus, and you dress like a bum, you know? Like he was bold. He was pretty blunt in saying this, and it was true. It was bad, and it hit me. And I was like, man, I do look like a bum, you know? Like, I need to part my hair. And missionaries never want to part their hair, but it really does. You say what you're representing. You're telling people you represent the Lord and His church, and you need to look like it. And ever since then, like, I iron my shirts now.
It makes a difference.
It really does. And like when I go snowboarding, I gotta look cool on the mountain. Same thing when I'm biking, I put my spandex on like everybody else. When you're a missionary, you wear your tie, tuck your shirt in, clean up your shoes, and part your hair and iron and look. You look the part.
That's, yes, great, great advice. Well, I really appreciate all of you joining us today. Thank you for your testimonies, your stories, your advice to those who might be thinking about going on a mission. My name is Rick Starr. We've been visited today by Chris Stevens, Steve Mathis, Talia Lisa, Kimberly Winterton, and Ariel Amada Levitt, who all went on missions to St. Petersburg, Russia, between the years of 2001 and 2003. Again, thank you all so much for being here with us today.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You've been listening to Why I Believe on the Mormon Channel.